is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Let's offer a warm Valley Group welcome to George.
Good evening, everybody. My name is George Guerrero. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is 11-17-10. That's God-given sobriety. I don't take credit for a God miracle. Started drinking when I was about 13 years old. And early on, I started experiencing consequences with it. Several trips to juvenile hall. With alcohol behind it. Quickly graduated to California Youth Authority and spent numerous times under the watch of somebody because I couldn't manage because I had a constant issue with this. So there always had to be somebody attached to me telling me when and how I could operate, setting parameters around me, right? And later on in life, I learned that that wasn't normal behavior. Normal people don't have to live like that. But yet, for a good portion of my life, that's how I lived. Somebody having to tell me what to do, how to do it, when to do it. Because of my drinking. My drinking put me in those positions. And, probably about when I was 20 years old, I stopped getting arrested, going to jail, being violated, through my parole. And so I was able to maintain for my early to mid-20s. And because I overcame, parole, I discharged off parole, supposedly honorably discharged off parole. And it's funny because on my last test, I put bleach in the bottle, and the PO, when he was coming back to discharge me, he says, "That was funny. There was some bleach content in your urinalysis sample." And I don't know what that was about. But anyhow, I went on to get discharged. And it set up this delusion because I thought that because I had overcame this obstacle that I was legit. Life was, just grand and things were going to be wonderful. But, it's at this time that my addiction started to take on larger proportions, it became pretty evident that I wasn't able to control it. It would start off, on weekend benders, and occasionally like for Monday night football or, a friend's birthday and we went out to drink during the week, I'd drink and I'd lose control. And I would experience those awful hangovers the next day. And so I tried my hardest to control my drinking during this time because I had a family, a young family that I had to sustain, and I didn't want to jeopardize that with my drinking. But as my addiction grew, I was no longer able to hold on to that. I found a way to work around those hangovers. So then I got to, I'm drinking every day. It was no longer, hurry up and get home on Friday and, you know, and party throughout the weekend and, you know, recuperate on Sunday and get ready for the work week again. You know, this was going on every day. Now, I go back because I was going to the doctor, you know, for checkups, and, you know, my wife would be with me and the doctor would ask, you know, do you drink? Yeah, I drink, you know, well, do you drink every day? How much do you drink? And I said, no, I don't. And I prided myself, you know, I don't drink every day. I just drink on the weekends, you know. And then my wife would speak up and say, yeah, but the way he drinks on the weekend, he makes up for it every single day of the week, you know. And so I held on to that for a while, but like I said, then it got into every day. And I was, you know, just working around those hangovers. And pretty soon, you know, this sickness was formed. And it was in full bloom. And, you know, for a brief time, I was able to hold on. And even though I'm going to work hungover and probably, if not still intoxicated from the night before, because I hardly got any sleep, I wasn't drinking on the job. But then it got to the point where now I'm getting intoxicated during work, you know, and I'm starting to jeopardize my employment. And I obtained for a guy, you know, that spent time in a state penitentiary, you know, and not having a college degree, just a GED, I was able to obtain a pretty good career. And, you know, I had some things going on pretty good for me. Me and my wife were both working well. I bought my first house at the age of 21. And so there was a lot of things at stake. But with all that being said, I wasn't able to hold on, you know. And once it took on its full, you know, its full cycle, it was on, and it was going on throughout the day. And you know, the next thing to come was, you know, the old lady gave me an ultimatum. You know, you're gonna have to quit, or me and the kids are gonna leave. And, you know, we had just purchased our second home, and it seemed like every time the door was about to close in on me, I was able to just elude it, whether it be an employer. As soon as they started to catch up to me and start to figure out, man, something's going on. You know, this guy don't just have the flu or, you know, your common cold. There's something more to this fellow. And as soon as they're getting ready to close the door on me, boom, I get another job offer somewhere else. And then I get to start over there. Well, you know, and for my wife, every time that I made those switches, it bought me a little more time. I get into this new house and I get this new job, man. Right? And, you know, the book talks about that, you know, about using all these things that I think that if I, you know, got a better home, a bigger home, that I think if I got that better job, you know, that I was able, that I'd be able to sustain, you know. And, you know, after being a felon, you know, I was able to stay out of trouble for more than 10 years, and I was able to obtain a position at a state prison. And so I'm here at this job, and I'm thinking, this is the answer. So surely I'm not going to mess this job up, right? Surely I'm not going to flush that down. And I just had my last kid, and it's like, you know, I can't ruin things because I got my family at stake. The wife's threatening to leave. I just got this new job, and it's full of promises for me and my family. I can't piss that away, you know. But again, I wasn't able to hold on. You know, my addiction got the better of me, and my wife ended up leaving me. And I ended up losing the house, and I ended up losing the vehicle, and I ended up having to borrow vehicles and bum my way to get to work to Delano. And, you know, eventually it got to the point where, you know, I'm here at the prison, intoxicated, you know, and they started doing like random testing and stuff, you know, before we entered the prison. And I'm like, man, I gotta, and they were getting ready to fire me, you know, and it's hard to get fired from there, you know, and they started this paper trail on me, and, you know, it was a matter of time, but, you know, I'm in this delusion. And so, you know, one day I had no sleep, and I get to work, and I'm red-eyed, and I mean, it's coming out of my pores, and I'm going, and I'm walking up, and, you know, something just said, man, you got to just turn away and get out of here. They're going to end up just putting you in a holding cell and they're, you know, taking you to court from here and filing charges. And I just, you know, I was done, you know, and I walked away from that, man. And it got dark, really dark from that point, because I no longer had, you know, my family was gone. You know, when my family left, I was like, phew, I now have like this weight off of me. Like before, if there was any little thing holding me back, you know, it was my family. But now they're gone. They've moved on. Like nobody's here to hold me down. I get to drink however, whenever I want, with whomever I want. I don't answer to nobody anymore. And so, And it went on like that. And, you know, it got to the point where I was by myself, and, you know, had my mom not offered a room to me, you know, I had been living under a bridge, and I was getting to that point, because they were getting to the point where they were calling the cops on me, didn't want me there, but I was selfish, and I was imposing my will there, you know. And and that's how, you know, that's how it came about. And, you know, I went on the spree for about 3 or 4 years, a good one, you know, with no employment, just full blown out there. And you know, I got to the point where now I'm wanting to quit. You know, my wife's moved on, and it hurts. You know, it hurt to see my family leave. Even though she left, she had still been in contact and had been saying to me, you know, I'm giving you this amount of time to go out and get well, you know. And I really, truly wanted to, but my addiction had just taken its full course, and I was incapable of pulling that off. And so I got to the point where it was so dark, man. I didn't want to do what I was doing anymore, but I couldn't stop, if that makes any sense. I couldn't stop from doing it. And people would look at me, my loved ones would look at me and say, why are you doing this? If you just don't want to do it, like, why can't you just stop and not do it? Well, for those people that are not afflicted with this disease to the degree that some of us are, they don't understand that we have lost our willpower. We don't have the power to stop that. And so it got very dark. It got to the point where, you know, I used to pride myself in saying, man, you know, people that try to kill themselves are cowards, you know. And, you know, in the book they talk about that. In Bill's story, they shed some light on that. And it worked like that for me too, because I had that idea. But it's funny how my addiction took me to this place that now the only way out seemed was to kill myself. And I felt like this isn't going to end, because I already had started checking myself into rehabs, trying different programs, trying to go to church, trying to find a solution. My brother's a Pentecostal minister, praying hands over me, you know, begging my brother, can you just baptize me? Maybe, you know, when you dunk me in the water, I'll be cleansed and from my sins, and I just won't go out and commit these acts anymore. You know, and it's not that easy. And so I got to this bitter end. God had other plans for me, because I was going to kill myself. Unfortunately, fortunately, Exeter PD and the Tulare County Sheriffs had other ideas, and they took me to jail. And, you know, you guys, those of you that have been in jail, you've been in that holding tank, it's always like sardines in there, just crammed in there. And I was in there by myself. Like, there was nobody in there. And I've never, ever, and I've been in there several times, ever seen it like that. And here I am, just dead silent, man. And, you know, and I start to cry. You know, you carry that hardcore front, and you've been through the rotation there in jail. You don't cry in there, you know, but it was to the point that it was beyond me, and I broke down there, and I get on my knees, and I pray, and I ask God, you know, what is to come of me? Because I've tried rehab, I've tried all these forms of recovery, and on my best day and my best foot forward, I haven't been able to quit. So I don't know where I'm going to go from here, you know. So I get out after, you know, they held me for my 6 or 8 hours, I can't remember. You know, I was released in the morning, and I got out, and I had another beer, and I had some other things that I used to go alongside with my beer, and I still had some money in my pocket. And then again kicked in this idea that I'm going to go out and I'm going to go party again today. And for whatever came over me, whatever took place, I just said, you know what, I had to go pick up my truck from where I was arrested at. It didn't get impounded. And so I pick up my truck in Exeter, and I got to drive back to Visalia, where my mom lives. And as I'm coming back, something just came over me. And I was just like, you know what? You need to go home and go to bed, man. This is done. So I go home, and I sleep. I slept the whole day. And I get up in the evening, and I felt like this was just one big dream. And maybe I just dreamed it all, and I wake up and realize, and it wasn't. And that I was dying from this, and something had to be done. And so I prayed again, and I said, God, I'm done. I don't know what to do. And I feel really ashamed, because I've always had this idea that a man should not be that weak. A man should be strong. He should always have an outlet. He shouldn't surrender or give in to anything. But here I am, broken. And you know, when you're humble enough, you know, and the book always references that, if you're humble and if you're truly honest. And so when I get to this point and I'm reading these things today from a gut level, I know what that means. I am completely humble and I am completely honest. And that's why when I give my sobriety date, I said that's God-given sobriety, because it's not anything that I did. It's what God did for me. And so things change, man. You know, I used to use this word trigger. These triggers are around me, you know. But when God dropped the hammer, it was done. These things I used to call triggers, they were no longer triggers. I was in the same household, and God had me protected. My brother sat in the other room, and he did what he did. You know, he got high and he drank, and that always, every time I tried to get clean, that always crippled me. But this time, man, I was safe and protected, man. Believe it or not, like in the middle of the night, I'd wake up and the house would be pitch dark, and I'd get up to go to the kitchen to get something to drink. Big house, 4-bedroom, 2-bath, big house. I walk down that long, dark hallway, turn to the right to go to the kitchen. And if his bedroom door was closed and the light was peeking through the bottom, it's party time. It's 2 or 3 in the morning. He's not sitting up watching TV with the light on. Other nights, he falls asleep with the light on. It's dark and you can just see the reflection of the TV. But when the bedroom light's on, it's party time. And, you know, and those were always my setbacks, so I thought, right? But this is where God had took me, because at this point in time, I wouldn't even get up during the night in the beginning. God would keep me asleep all night long. And you might say, oh, it's just coincidence. I believe in God today. There is no coincidences. God is everything. God's the filter. Everything goes through Him. He picks and chooses everything. And so, here I am, man. Safe and protected. And now I say, okay, something's changed. I gotta do something with this. You know, they say I'm on this grace period. That's what they called it. So I can't stay idle. I gotta find something. And I prayed and I said, God, give me a church or give me a recovery group or something. But wherever it is I go, I'm going to hit it to the fullest. Anything that they tell me to do, I'm going to do it. And I'm not going to have no questions about it. I'm not going to have no say-so in it. Because all these other times, I've always thought that I can put my own little twist in things. And everything that I've ever tried does not work. So I'm ready to give in. And so, like I said, humbleness and honesty, humility. I was being granted these things. My heart was fully open. I was receptive to the Spirit. And boom, I went. I grew up here on the north side. So I take off. The first church used to be next to the old juvenile hall. I think they call it the Journey Church now. Back then, it used to be called the Restoration Church. Okay, next to the old juvenile hall. So I went over there. That was the first church. And I walk up, boy, and I hear church going. And I open the door, try to open the door. They had the doors locked. And I knocked on the door, and I was there for about 5 to 10 minutes. Nobody ever came and opened the door. I said, okay, this isn't where God wants me. And so I went around looking for a meeting, couldn't find one. So I just opened, and I had been in recovery before. I had been in and out of the rooms of 12-step processes, AA. And so the next day I wake up and they had the Muner meeting here, the 12 o'clock meeting at the Bridge Street Drunks. And I went there. And my sponsor, he grew up in that house. And I had, you know, my sponsor, I had met with him years back, you know, about a year or two back. I had been through an outpatient program through Cuya Delta like 5 different times, Family Recovery Center. And during that process, you know, to graduate from intensive, the intensive out care part of it to the next step, I can't remember what they called it, you had to get a sponsor. And so I went out years prior to this, and I had asked my sponsor, hey, Teddy, you know, do you think you could sponsor me? And he's like, well, you know, you gotta do some of this work first, you know, and then, you know, we'll go from there. And I said, well, I need to produce some documentation. You know, can I put your name down, say you're my sponsor? He's like, well, I'm not calling you, I'm not saying I'm your sponsor, but you can put my name down. And okay, well, I used his name, and I got to the next phase, when we know that that didn't work out. So anyways, as soon as I went to this meeting, You know, and I got to reading some of the book, you know, I remembered that he had given me some instructions. So I got on it and I started doing what he had told me a couple of years prior to do, which was read the first 164 pages is how they were doing it back then. So I started reading it. And I found out he was going to be speaking at a meeting at Pine at like 11 o'clock at night. And so I drive over there to meet him. And I, you know, he spoke. And I, after the meeting, I went and found him. And I said, hey, guess what, man? I started on reading the pages. He's like, yeah, whatever. You know, I heard that before. And I said, well, can I have your number? You know, and I'll call you when I'm done. He says, sure. Here's my number. And he walks away. And a few days later, I called him and I said, hey, I'm done. You know that assignment? He looked at me. He's like, what? I said, I'm done. I said, I'm ready to meet. What's our next step? He's like, okay, get some highlighters. You know, and you're going to meet me, you know, here at this time. And that's how it started off. And I met him. And he gave me my next assignment. And I did it. And I called him, and I'm ready, and I'm ready, and I'm ready. And he's like, hey, slow down, man. I've got some other guys I'm working with. I'm like, man, brother, I'm ready to go. Let's go. You know, keep on feeding me, man. And that's how it started. And as we went through this process, what time do we finish?
Like 5:30.
5:10. So we got 10 more minutes?
Yeah.
I'll blow through this real quick. So as we start going through this, right, it's critical that you identify with this step one, okay? And we look at step one in three different ways. It's a threefold disease. One, the physical craving. Okay, what is that? And earlier they were reading, I'm sorry, I don't know page for page, but they were reading, you know, about we're physically and mentally different from others. What makes us different from others? Because not everybody's like that, right? There's some people out there that they're normies. They're normal. They don't have this physical and mental feature. And believe it or not, in some of the recovery meetings, not everybody in there suffers from that threefold disease. Okay? So it's very important that if you're suffering from this, that you either self-diagnose yourself as that through your own experience, or you find somebody. You know, there's a few people from my group here, and they're well educated on that, and they can tell you, you know, sit down and qualify you on this. Do I have the physical craving? What does that mean? Well, when I put alcohol into my body, do I have loss of control? What do you mean? Well, let's see. I know one time, and they tell you, all you need is one experience to validate this. I don't have to, I got thousands of them, but I'll give you one. I'm a Ram fan. The Rams were playing the Redskins on a Monday night football. And we said we were going to go. I told my wife, hey, I want to go with my friends. Some of my friends were Redskins fans, some were Rams. We're going to go out, we're going to watch this football game at my buddy's house, okay? And I'll be back in a little while. Well, this physical craving is that once I put it into my system, I lose control, right? I had every intention. I had to go to work tomorrow. My kids are asleep. And I told my wife that I'd be back after the game. But what happened was I put alcohol into my system and I lost control. I never made it home that night. You know, if you have experience like that, that one, I set out to drink only so much, but I have the inability to control how much I take in once I start. Okay? That's the physical craving. And I identify with that a million times. I could give you a million stories of when I've overshot the mark. Then this mental obsession, you know, then there's multiple forms of this obsession, okay? While I'm still in my drinking, and even while I'm in a sober state. So while I'm drinking, even though I'm still experiencing loss of control, and I'm now I'm in my 30s, I've suffered many of consequences through my drinking. And my experience shows me that once I drink, all bets are off. Do I still try to continue to drink like other people that can control their drinking? Is that what my experience shows me? And absolutely, absolutely, I continue to set out and drink like others, like other non-alcoholics, right? And that's in my drinking. Now, a mental obsession from a sober state, right? So let me go a little bit further with this. And then there's this unmanageability, right? And I have to look at all my personal relationships and those that are close to me. What's my relationships like? And when I came into this process, my personal relationships were in the toilet. I had 3 women in my life that were really close to me. One of my sisters, my wife, and my mother. And you could ask them. I went in a merry-go-round. I'd go to my wife's house when she'd accept me, and I'd throw them in the toilet, and I'd call them bitches and what have you, and trash them, right? And then she wouldn't have me, and I'd run over to my sister. And you know what she did? I can't stand her. You know how she's played me? And then I go over to my mom, and I tell my mom, I can't stand them. Norma is always calling the cops on me, getting into my business. You know, Sienna doesn't let me do this, right? And then my mom won't have me, and I run over to my wife, and I tell my wife, God, my mom, God dang, she's like a magnifying glass, man. She's all up in my mix, right? So all my personal relationships, my kids, they don't want to see me. I can't even hold down a job, right? Things are unmanageable. I'm not able to control my emotional natures. I'm depressed. I'm irritable. I'm restless. I'm discontented, right? I have experience with all of that. So I am qualified for this step 1. I am completely powerless over this. And I, up until this point, when I'm in my drinking, I'm not able to control any of those things, right? And so now I'm asking myself, what is it, if I can't control it and I can't stop it, what is it that I need to do to stop this? What is the solution? We go on to step 2 and we start to kick around this God idea. And my drinking put me in a position that I was faced with 2 alternatives, and the book talks about that. Either I was going to continue drinking and living the way I did, and I was, you know, seconds away from killing myself. So, you know, for me to drink is for me to die, or I'm going to take the other fork in the road. And what was that? I was going to accept spiritual help. And any time, and that's where I went, and I went on, and accepting that spiritual help and seeing what my dilemma, what my problem was in this step 1 has been the fuel that has kept me going through my whole recovery. And any time that I get complacent and I stop and I pause and I'm being relaxed on my disciplines of my recovery program, I always go back to my step 1. Am I completely powerless? And this obsession that I was talking about when we're in recovery, if I'm in recovery and I'm slacking off, I'm not taking inventory, I'm not working with others, I don't have sponsees, I'm not making time for them, then I'm still in this obsession, or I'm going back into this obsession that I could live a non-spiritual life, right? Because spiritual life is not just about praying. It's about taking action. It's about going through this process to being able to help those that are still suffering. And that's our primary purpose today. The book states it. And that's the fuel that lights my fire today. And glad to be a recovered alcoholic. Glad to be of service to you guys. Thank you, Bill, for inviting me. Thank you, ladies, for your help. And I love my family. You know, we have our home group, Bridge Street Drunks. We meet Thursday nights at 7. We invite any of you to come and join us. Thank you.